Vet Voice, 60 Years of Freedom. My unit was assigned to Munsan to provide security and traffic control for the exchange of our POWs with the Chinese and North Koreans, May. It was a hot and dusty job, but we all felt good about seeing our comrades reunited with us. I saw the expressions of joy on most of our returned GIs' faces when they got out of the trucks or ambulances. Tears flowed freely from the returnees and those of us who were observing. We heard stories of some of the atrocities committed against U.S. troops by the surviving witnesses. Munsan was the base-slash-support camp for the whole operation, and we had to fly the U.N. flag along with ours, not a popular requirement to carry out. Kenneth R. Sipes, Yuma, Arizona. My father-in-law was a prisoner of war in Korea for 33 months. He marched to several locations in the cold, ate food with maggots in it, saw fellow soldiers die, and came home weighing about 90 pounds. But he recovered and worked as a mechanic for Chevrolet for 38 years, raising a family. John L. Blue, Pine Bluff, North Carolina. The very first prisoner exchange involved sick and disabled soldiers on each side and was known as Operation Little Switch, occurring at Munsan Ni in April 1953. The switch at Panmunjom in August 1953 was known as Operation Big Switch. I participated in this exchange, which involved thousands of North Korean and Chinese prisoners. James F. Tobin, Bayshore, New York. Thank you for this article. It may help the brother of a Peoria, Illinois boy I went through basic with at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, in 1951. Most of us were sent to Korea, and a few flew to Okinawa. I kept in touch with a half dozen or so of those in Korea who I knew best. One day I got a letter back, marked missing in action. It happened to be the one from Peoria. Upon returning home, I looked up his mother and brother. They were so happy that I did and that I knew him. His mother passed away years later after going to seances and fortune tellers to hear some news about her son, to no avail. I kept in touch with her remaining son. I mailed this article to him, hoping it would help him understand what may have happened to his brother and so many others, and to get some closure, however painful. Jean Petcher, Tannersville, Pennsylvania. I have agonized over the fate of one man taken prisoner, the son of an Air Force commander, when my husband was stationed in Albany, Georgia, in the early 50s. A handsome young West Point graduate driving a convertible arrived at Turner Field. I saw him often at the officers' club with his wife, who was soon expecting their child. We lost track of him when my husband went to B-47 training and eventually to Korea. My husband commanded a reconnaissance squadron during Vietnam, and we lived in Japan. In 1969, I was stunned to read an article in a Japanese newspaper stating that the man was still a prisoner in North Korea. I grieve for him. Juanita Statham, Costa Mesa, California. For a time, I was the only Spanish-speaking benefits counselor at the VA Philadelphia Regional Office. A veteran named Felipe was referred to me. He explained that his unit, the 65th Infantería of Puerto Rico, was entirely Spanish-speaking, even the general. Felipe was on a night patrol when he was captured by the North Koreans. He was marched to a camp, and since the North Koreans and Chinese did not speak Spanish, he was exempt from the political education classes. Instead, he was sent out to gather firewood, wearing only light cotton clothing. He was punished if he did not bring in his quota. After Felipe's release, he had a hard time with VA because of his lack of English. When I met him, he was receiving some benefits, and I realized that he was probably eligible for a greater amount. I helped him apply and translated his history as a POW. As a result, he received a substantial increase. Felipe was at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, for a mass presentation of the POW Medal, organized by the Philadelphia VA office. If he reads this, I want him to know that I was proud to help a fellow veteran get what he was entitled to receive. Those kinds of cases were the best part of the job. Bill Gray, Juana Diaz, Puerto Rico. Last Rites. Concerning Ken Olson's article, May, I was appalled and shocked that Sergeant Christy Roberts was denied interment at a VA burial ground. Whether you're on active duty or training, you are serving your country. Sharon Toppin, Stowe, Ohio. We do not have a National Veteran Cemetery in North Dakota. The closest is in Sturgis, South Dakota, approximately 300 miles away. The North Dakota National Guard built a veterans cemetery just south of Mandan, near the center of the state. The cemetery is maintained by the Guard and accepts all veterans just like a national cemetery. I pre-registered for burial with no problem, though I was from South Dakota when I served in the Air Force. I think state veterans' cemeteries can be just as nice and meaningful as a national cemetery. James Luder, Mandan, North Dakota. Road to Hell. Alan Dowd feels we should go our own way as far as the United Nations is concerned, May. Our country overreacts in many situations where we should not be involved, with no meaningful results except the loss of precious lives. The United Nations may not be the most efficient group to police the world, but I don't think that means our country should become the vigilante. If we choose to be a UN member, we should work to make it stronger. If we cannot do that, we should get out. M.D. Hamilton, Hatboro, Pennsylvania. A wound reopened. I'm about to burst a suture laughing at and with the writers from Texas, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Vet Voice, May. As a master of public administration, I continue to be amazed at how badly our American people misunderstand their own history and governance, or given the gridlock in Washington, the lack of it. The war between the states was not about slavery. That evil was dying of its own accord and would not have lasted another 20 years, although it was a part of the whole cloth. The question was whether the federal government, a product of an agreement between the states, could tell a sovereign state what it could or could not do within its own borders. This is as contentious an issue today as it was then. Will we be forced to contest this issue again? I pray to God that cooler heads prevail. Lee and Jackson, along with a slew of others, displayed a courage of conviction few men possess. They turned, as Lee did, stating, "I cannot, I shall not fire on my home." If placed in command of your state's National Guard or of federal troops, would you have that courage? All the men and women who fought and died in that unnecessary war started by unrealistic politicians, when negotiations alone would have sufficed, were and are, regardless of rank, color, or ethnicity, heroes. We should honor each and every one and hang every picture we can, naming them to places of honor. Joseph E. Herbert, Toms River, New Jersey. The American Legion magazine welcomes your opinions. Include your hometown and a daytime phone number for verification. All letters published are subject to editing. Due to the volume of mail received, not every letter can be acknowledged. The American Legion magazine, P.O. Box 1055, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46206, magazine@legion.org.